met with assistance from the Community Broadcasting Foundation and heard from across Australia to around the world online.
You're listening to Zed Games, where we bring you the best in gaming news, reviews, community and culture.
Want to get in touch? Find us on social media or email us on air@zedgamesau.net.
G'day, Cheeky.
Hey.
Beat you to it, matey.
Yeah, you did.
Little ninja intro there.
Yeah, man. I was like, she's getting ready. I'm going to come with the g'day first.
And the snipe.
It's a bit of a right.
So rude.
You had a bit
of
a stroke.
Oh my God, I'm having
there.
A stroke. God, this happens to me every time.
6 seconds in.
It's okay. Yeah. We've already had a stroke. Yeah. I'm peacing out.
Yeah.
You're hanging out on Zed Games. In studio, we have Millie.
Hey.
I'm Jack. Kate.
Hi.
And Kosh.
Hiya.
Coming up on the show, Kate, you've been wanting to talk about internet gaming disorder for an entire month.
Yes. Or longer, but yes.
It has been recognized by the World Health Organization as a genuine disorder for the first time ever?
Well, the DSM...
Or is pending.
Okay, so it's an official thing with the World Health Org at this stage.
Right.
And they're not seeming to back down from that, but it has been mentioned since 2013 in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual for Psychiatric and Psychological Disorders.
Right.
As like a needs further work.
But so it seems to have gotten further than that more recently.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely be talking about it on the show.
Cool. Well, that's coming up. I'm going to be talking about this cute little game called The Gardens Between. Someone's going to play it and you're going to love it. I guarantee one of you are going to... Oh, it's
Yay.
Such a good game. I love it so much.
I love new games.
On Switch.
Yay.
Switch.
More Switch games.
And Millie, you're going to be chatting another mobile game.
Heck yeah, because I can't play enough of them, apparently. What is my free time?
I played it too, and I feel like we're going to fight about this one.
Yeah, we probably will, but it's okay. It's okay.
Oh, save the review.
I keep all my ends open. That was wrong.
People. What a quote. I'll make sure I cut that up later. You usually get addicted to mobile games quite quickly, but this one you were like, I have some things to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
sounds rare.
We'll get to that a little bit later on, but first, the week in gaming news.
Here it comes.
Across Australian radio and across the world online, from 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane, this is your weekly Zed Games news update. Western Australia's screen agency, ScreenWest, has launched the Interactive Pilot Fund, providing funding support for original game projects. Developers working on a VR, AR, mixed reality, extended reality, serious games or multi-platform project can apply for a maximum of $20,000 per application. Culture and Arts Minister David Templeman commented, quote, "Through this fund and our investment in the upcoming Extended Reality WA Festival, I'm delighted that the McGowan government is giving Western Australian talent a power-up so that they will be better equipped to take part in the game," end quote. Ouya, the Kickstarter-funded project that raised over $8.5 million in 2013, will have its game store shut down on June 25th, 2019. According to the FAQ on Razer's website, once it has been shut down, access to the online store will no longer be available, but downloaded games may still function if they don't require a purchase validation. While Ouya's Kickstarter campaign was wildly popular at the time, sales slumped following launch, and Razer acquired Ouya's employees and content library in 2015. Paramount Pictures has delayed the Sonic the Hedgehog movie to February 14th, 2020. Director Alex Fowler tweeted that they are, quote, "taking a little more time to make Sonic just right," end quote, adding a hashtag stating no visual effects artists were harmed in the making of the movie. After the first trailer was released in February, it drew a number of complaints from Sonic fans about the way the character had been redesigned. Paramount and Sega were planning to change the design ahead of the set release date of November 20th, but it seems they adjusted plans when some expressed concerns that visual effects artists would be made to crunch. After Riot Games announced it will not be eliminating the arbitration clause for current workers, Riot employees have drafted a petition to send to the board of directors. An excerpt from the petition says, quote, "Riot has always aspired to be at the cutting edge of game companies. We have also stated that we want to be a world leader in diversity and inclusion. To do both, we need to make shifts not just in our game production, but in our employment practices. Making this change, even when there's a clear cost to the company, unequivocally shows Riot's commitment to changing itself, both to current and future Rioters," end quote. That's all for now. For more gaming updates, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @ZEDGamesAU.
Hope you enjoyed that little snippet of news read by our resident newsreader and dad, Jack Crinjan.
I love that I'm both. It's great. It's such a...
You're everything, let's be honest.
It's on my business card, resident newsreader and dad.
Yeah.
I'm not an actual dad. No. I probably
radio
should point
dad.
That out.
No, yeah. He's radio dad. Yeah. And Adrian was radio stepdad, but now he's banished.
So. Wasn't he uncle?
Yeah.
Yeah, technically yeah. radio
Because Ray is still granddad.
Oh, yeah, Ray is granddad.
Ray's probably coming in for the 2 weeks that I'm going to geek out.
I love how we're actually debating the, like, family tree.
No, it's very real, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm your mummy.
Right.
This is a very weird
I just got like, some like interesting looks from Kosh and Kate at me. They're just like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Why are we here?
In that, a few stories. Sonic the Hedgehog, they're getting Sonic just right. So February 14th, it's on Valentine's Day.
Wow.
That's where I'm going.
I am so not.
Hate
That's
it already.
My Valentine's Day present is I'm not going to take them to that.
Good
I'm
to
so
see.
Ready.
See, that's how you break up with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You take them to the movie.
Screen West funding games. Good on them. We've got funding for games in Queensland and New South Wales and Victoria. Screen West getting on board. And Kosh, the Ouya.
Oh, the wonderful Ouya.
What is it? Why did it exist?
I don't know. Because one games company decided to be, you know, unique and different. And what they made was a worse version of anything that's been made.
They made $8.3 million, though.
Yeah, because
they
it was all on promises. No, the Kickstarter
like
made that
buys.
Much. It's like the new thing that's coming out. They're promising
else.
Like the above and beyond.
Yeah,
and then they deliver, and they're like, "Oh wait, we haven't actually
festival all over again."
Yeah. Basically,
it's just Kickstarter in a nutshell. Half the time, it's
yeah.
just like, "We are going to make this amazing technology.
Look, we're innovating.
Oh, we haven't made it yet.
I don't know how to do that.
And we're just going to run away with
money,
all
though.
Your money."
Well, yeah, I mean that's also the federal government at this point.
Ouch!
But I bought it secondhand. That's the worst part. I bought the Ouya secondhand.
How much you spent on it though?
$50.
Oh well, that's
you can't
look,
go wrong with that.
You're doing better than like full price, which Australian would have been about $120.
Yeah.
So
it was a year after I bought it, and then I was like, "Oh, I'm going to just play little Android games on it." And I was like, "Oh, play it on my emulate games, do whatever." And
No. The controller was just too bad.
It was all horrible.
It's Millie. Essentially like a basic Yoho Mihari's machine these days. You get what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, 4ZZZ is literally pirate radio. It has been pirate radio, so we're not, you know, hiding anything here.
All right!
Speaking of Android games, you've been playing an iOS game
I
sent you.
What a segue.
I've forgotten the name of it.
It's called Mount Frosty.
There you go.
And it is so wholesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's so beautiful. And it's just colourful and lovely, and I really wanted to like it.
There's so much weight in what you'd said there. You're like, I just wanted to love it so bad,
I
but
did,
it's just disappointing. It's
beautiful.
Like your second child, you know?
And like the music is so fun. Oh, sorry, Kate.
I totally missed that.
You were the
thank
first
God.
Child.
No, Kate Crinjanin.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, no, it's all
Yikes,
good. It's all good, Kate, in studio. So, essentially, Mount Frosty is made by Melt Games, which is really cute, because, you know, Frosty.
Melt and Frost.
Melt.
Yeah. Get it? It's funny.
It's an endless mountain adventure. Yeah. So, basically, think of Temple Run, but on a mountain and on skis. It's cute. Mm-hmm. So you avoid obstacles like trees, rocks, and other skiers, which is fun. And you fall down if you hit them, which is kind of cute. And the music slows down like boom, 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 boom.
You don't get bonus points?
No, surprisingly
Dang.
Not. So you can unlock different levels through reaching a certain point in the current level. I unlocked the ice cream level and the tropical island level, which is really cute. You can collect coins, stars, and, you know, just don't fall down, basically. It's like one of those endless runner games.
It is really, really weird, though, that when you fall down, you just ragdoll with this really vacant expression.
Yeah.
But it looks
vacant,
haunted.
The vacant expression.
The vacant expression is what got me, because I'm just like, if you had, like crossed out eyes or something, you'd be like, oh, no, you fell over. You're, like, passed out or whatever.
They're
like, I get that.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're just, like, looking forward vacantly, I'm just like,
Jesus. See, I loved the juxtaposition between the cuteness of the game and then when you die, it's just like, oh, look. And it's just so real. I don't know.
I found it really cute to begin with.
And then you die a lot, like a lot.
Yeah, a lot. You control it through tapping to turn left or right. This is my major gripe with this game. I was beginning to think. When I first downloaded it and I heard Endless Runner, I was thinking it's either like sort of the Temple Run scheme of Endless Runner where you're going sort of thing. Like you're just going straight and you control it via either tapping or swiping left or right to avoid obstacles. But this one is sort of on a rail of sorts. So you sort of, when you first start off, you end up going right immediately.
Yeah.
And that threw me for an eight ball immediately. Yeah. I was like, what? And I just, like, ran into a tree. And
good start.
But it tells... Yeah.
That's, like, real skiing.
Yeah.
But it tells you not to, like, tap repeatedly. You need to, like, you know, slow down and everything like that. But I found myself having to tap repeatedly because you
want it to go straight.
You want... Well, technically, yeah. But, like, I found that even though you're turning in a wide circle and then you turn again to time your turn... to the other one, I found that it was still quite difficult to reach that point. Yeah. And here reaches my other gripe with it, is that I found the collisions very strong. They're very wide, I think. I find them too large, because I think even with the trees, like, you can just be sort of next to it and you go...
Yeah, boom, boom. Oh, so like, you only have to hit a branch.
With the actual artwork?
Yeah, okay, so cool. It's sort of like, oh, like, if you were skiing, you'd, like, hit a tree and they'd be like... sort of thing. Like, yeah. You'd stop. But for an endless runner game, so like... Oh, well, you're done. So I feel like the collisions need to be just a smidge smaller, a little bit more forgiving.
It just, like, takes you out of the experience,
yeah, I feel. Yeah, definitely.
It also feels like... I haven't played much. I've literally just been playing it while you've been talking about it. Yeah. But usually in an endless runner, you're like, oh, you died. Do you want to play again
if you
watch an ad or if you have 10 coins or whatever? Do you have that option at all?
Not that I found.
Weird.
I haven't found it, no.
Weird. Like, if you were going to milk, you know, money out of people, I feel like that is an obvious opportunity.
Hugely.
Well, the opportunity comes in from, is it a free-to-play game?
Yeah, it's free to play.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah.
Yeah, that it's weird, right?
Where's the money coming from?
Yeah, where's it coming from? Mm. I played as a panda. I like the panda more than the Yeti. I found the Yeti unsettling.
Wompo.
Yeah, Wompo.
Who? Wompo.
Yeah, but...
I like Kermit the Frog.
I found it...
Sounds like a burp, actually. Wompo. Wompo.
I like Leggy.
Leggy.
Like, it looks like Kermit the Frog, but... Yeah. Bouncy personality. And I'm like, yeah, look, I'm into it.
So, like I said, it's really wholesome and, like, I really wanted to enjoy it. And I can tell that there's been a lot of love put into it. Like, it's 3D, like, to begin with. Like, I know how hard 3D animation is and having to program all that collision and everything like that. So there's so much love put into this game. But it has so many excellent reviews. Like, people say, I need more stars. I need more levels because they've just, like, done it in a day. And so I could just be really bad at it.
I can't tell how. No, because I didn't get as far as you did. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't play very much, but I enjoyed it. But
yeah, I was just, like,
hard.
Yeah, I was just, like, sitting in a corner for a bit and I played it for a couple of hours and I was just so frustrated by the end of it. I had to, like, go back and play, like, a Candy Crush
game. You were frustrated specifically because when you like, hit a wall, you really hit a wall? Like, that whiplash took you out so much?
Yeah, well, and the controls.
The other thing is that, like, when they put coins next to a tree, you think you're getting
a trick shot.
And you're like, oh, look at me. And then, I actually hit the tree because
it's the collisions are so wide.
Bigger than the actual thing is,
And that's what I really wanted to sort of implement in this game. I was hoping there would be, like, a near miss sort of thing. Like, you get points for that thing. Like, you know, you swipe past someone, you get a near miss. Or, like, good turn. Mm. That sort of thing. Because that feels a lot more like a skiing racing game. But this sort of feels a little... empty.
See, you liken it to an endless runner.
Yeah.
I honestly think it would be I understand that they're very similar, but it feels a lot closer to me like a Flappy Bird.
I was going to say, like, I think more that,
technically, Flappy Bird is an endless runner.
That's what I mean. True. But in an endless runner, I feel like you have a lot more control of your character. In this, the turning circle is set, and you really have to, like you said, ride, like tapping both sides super often to just ski in a straight line. You forget, this sounds really dumb, like, I don't know how to play video games, but you forget how big the turning circle is every single time.
Every time.
And that is what's frustrating, I think.
Yeah, hugely.
Yeah, the directional capacity is very limited.
Like, here, gosh.
I was going to say, I've got it on my phone.
Yeah, we can all get caught
on the phone. I'm the only one who hasn't played it yet, so I'm just thinking, is this 3D ski free? That's all I'm thinking.
Was that, like, the Windows, like...
The Windows. Yeah, normally you could just press the button to go faster.
I found that actually, like, that one's more straightforward, honestly.
That's true. Although you don't have, like, a terrifying, like, yeti snow yeti. Haunts my dreams.
Yeah, so instead, you play as the Yeti, which is still terrifying.
Welcome to where we review Windows XP games, everyone.
I think that was Windows 95, wasn't it?
Or 98, probably older.
I played the first map.
Yeah.
I instantly went right and slammed into a tree.
So it
is consistent.
Yeah,
I think that's everyone.
I think what threw me off the most is that you sort of get a tutorial when you first boot up the game and it says, you know, press this to turn this way and that way. But, like, when you've got these obstacles in front of you, like, don't hit the snowman, and it says, and I'm pressing to move it, and then suddenly the warning pops up. It says, don't press too much. Don't press too much.
Yeah, and I'm like, don't press too much. Let me press.
Like, but I want to press to turn.
Yeah.
Because that makes more sense. Like, to, you know, I've got to adjust my turn speed. But they're like, no, do a large
I'm
turn.
A, yeah, and I'm a casual tapper.
I get it, but
meh. It's also a little bit weird where you... It would make more sense if you could use the left and the right side of the screen to switch to skiing left or right.
Yes.
Instead, it interprets every single tap as switch.
Yes.
So you'll tap on the right thinking, cool, I'm going to go right, but you forgot that you accidentally mistapped twice on the left,
yeah.
You know, and then you go left into a tree.
I've done
and
that like, before, yeah.
It's,
as much as there's polish, I think, in the visuals and the animations and all of that, the feel of the game is a bit, I don't want to say unfair, but it isn't smooth. It's
wonky.
Jarring. That said, it has only just launched.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
So that has only, it's only come out in the last week and a half or 2 weeks. Like, so it is very new.
Like, I was about to say, like, it sounds like, you know, a boo indie game, but, like, it literally, sort of what I feel is that, like, as a game that's just come out, it's still sort of lacking that extra polish.
So Kosh just looks up at me, like, really disappointed. He's like, oh, not again.
No, no, I did die, but what I'm finding is it's not a side-by-side game. It's not a side-by-side tap. You tap in the middle and it just switches.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's what we're saying.
I don't know if it sees it, but I'm just like, I get the same
feeling.
It'd
make more sense.
Yeah,
to get more sense,
I have like that. Yeah, cool. So I feel like, because I read on the interwebs for this page that it was in alpha for a bit. And
it
I'm sort of looking at it, I'm like, it
should
have gone into a beta for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's, like, while there's heaps of good reviews on there that are saying that, I had a good time with it and it's addictive. I'm just saying that I feel like there's a lot of kinks that could be ironed out to make it addictive properly. Because I noticed that when I got frustrated, I was like, oh, I'm going to keep playing though. So it has the addictive quality, but eventually you just get to the point where, like, I have reached this point 7 times.
Yeah.
And I've run into a tree, a skier, and a rock.
Yeah.
It's like, good night.
I'm over it.
Yeah, the other thing with games that are really catchy on the first play, they generally... Well, they do definitely
they're
need
not like
more
that on
depth.
The 50th.
Yeah, they need some depth to actually keep that longevity, and this game, I think, definitely has the, you know, catch appeal, and it'll get you
hugely.
To stick momentarily, but maybe not the depth to keep longevity.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
But it is, I feel like, a good start. It maybe
definitely.
Could have used a little bit more time in an alpha or a beta phase, but... those complaints about content or lacking content, obviously if it's just launched, then the developer's going to be supporting it over time. So,
definitely.
Could still be addressed.
Definitely. Mount Frosty was developed actually in Sydney by a studio called Melt Creativity. Do you know if it's their first game?
I couldn't find that, but it could be. But Melt is so cute when they made
it. I know,
like Mount Frosty. It's like, ice cream.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
And they have like an ice cream level and everything. It's like so wholesome. And they end all their like, they're replying to all the reviews, which is really cute.
Aww.
On iTunes, and they end with Stay Frosty. I'm like, oh, you guys. Aww. I feel so bad for ripping on you, but please fix your game.
I mean, the thing is, we're not ripping on them. I think that it's still a decent game, but
it
needs
it
work.
Is.
Like, if you are tripping over this podcast, right, in like 6 months' time, and it's towards the end of 2019, odds are it's going to be good.
Yeah.
There's
it'll definitely
be
better by them.
Patches, there's going to be more content. So I feel like it's going to be good in 6 months' time.
It's already updated within like a couple of days, I'm pretty sure.
It does look to be their first game. So they've got Mount Frosty that's come out now. The support is a little bit new because they've got Ice Cream Golf in late 2019, The Wonderful Game of Ball Foot in late 2019, and then, weird, I know. Uh-huh. And then Cosmic Trash, in 2020. So they've got a lot of games on their plate as well. So.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that limits their ability to support this one game.
Possibly.
But I think also it's worth mentioning, if it is their first game, it's a pretty solid first
game. It's pretty good. You can tell there's a lot of love put into it. And again, 3D modeling, I've done it before, and it's painful to get all those polygons lined up and to make it like a constantly 3D rotating world.
To look as good as it does,
that's
definitely.
Very difficult. So props to you guys for doing that. Like, it's amazing.
It is available now. Jeez. Yeah, damn.
Yeah.
On Android and iOS, Mount Frosty, you can download it from that Sydney developer. Thank
Go
you for
give
that
it
review,
some love.
Nelly.
Give it some love.
Thanks for the review.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, you hang up.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to have some serious
conversations right now. Let's get serious, guys.
Kate,
I thought the show was a little too fun, and I thought I should give you guys some readings.
Do it.
So that
I haven't read them still.
Oh my god!
This is
what it feels like to be a professor.
This is what it feels
like reading the readings in the lecture, and your professor's like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you on Facebook? And what I'm like, no, I'm trying to do the homework
I'm
you sent me a week ago.
Doing the thing that I was, yeah, I'm still not doing the right thing. But
oh, it's a mood.
Anyways, I want to talk about internet gaming disorder because it is now being kind of approved, if you will, by the World Health Organization as being a legitimate issue that needs to be handled.
Huge.
The last time we heard of this was back in the DSM-5 in 2013. And I just wanted to read the piece that the it's an article from the journal Addiction, and it basically discusses the reason why they decided to mention it. So this is written by the subgroup, which is the Substance Use Disorder group, Work Group. And one area they were designated to work on was behavioral addictions at large. And they covered things like, you know, gambling, shopping, exercise, different behaviors that people can get addicted to.
Right.
There were a few that they couldn't find much literature on, but they did find over 250 publications existing on internet gaming disorders. This is just a catch-all term for internet use disorder, gaming or internet addiction, gaming or internet dependence. The list goes on and on. So many big words for basically people being addicted to games or the internet or both. Despite the literature that they found, they concluded readily that no standard diagnostic criteria were applied across the studies because at that stage there was no way of actually measuring the disorder.
Right.
Because it's not yet actually a disorder. Yep. So from here, they did say the substantial differences related to the classification basically meant that the information on prevalence, course, treatment, and biomarkers associated with internet gaming disorder is inconclusive.
There was no consistency by the sounds, yeah.
Yeah, so they didn't have a consistent measurement. They didn't have any way to kind of test one thing consistently, and as such, the results just kept coming back inconclusive. Inconsistencies in classification, it did. So despite that, they did include it in Section 3 of the DSM-5 with the goal of this section to be fostering research of conditions included in that kind of group. So basically in 2013, they looked at it, saw that lots of people were talking about it. They thought maybe this is something we need to bring up. And they basically said that, you know, it needs further research. The question really that I've found consistently is whether it gets tested as an addiction similar to physical addictions and dependencies in that capacity, or if an entirely new scale gets made up. But the recommendation in the 2013 DSM was to focus on 7 pieces, preoccupation, tolerance, withdrawal, persistence, escape, problems, deception, displacement, and conflict. So basically different ways that it impacts the way people live.
Yep.
So preoccupation with it, you know, the tolerance to it, so needing to do it more and more as you play. You know, persistence, like persistently having this issue on your mind, using it to escape.
Yep.
Problems in your real life, those sorts of things, but they're pretty much the same measurements used for physical addictions.
Yes.
Where you do actually get a physical tolerance through use. So now the World Health Organization has come to the conclusion that it's going to be in their disorders.
Right.
But I honestly think that there is a question of whether the relationship goes from gaming to problems in the real life or problems in real life to gaming.
The cause and effect question.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Because as you said, it covers not just gaming. Like, not just, oh, you're playing WoW for 36 hours and it's affecting your life. Yeah, like, that's a bad thing.
I mean, in one go, it might be.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. Like, and there's definitely been reports of, you know, affected mental health and things like that for it. But, you know, it's not, I like how it's not just on gaming. Like, they're not just targeting gaming. It's internet.
Yes.
Like, as well, you know, being on social media and, like, for just looking at a Twitter feed for, you know,
absolutely,
that amount of time can be the same thing. Oh, I only got 12 likes on that post. I better post again or I need to interact more. And then that can also affect you just by being on that social media platform.
Yeah. So I guess it should be noted that this is literature that I found through research on social media and its effects on adolescence.
Oh, okay, cool.
And identity formation. And through this, there was, you know, social media disorder, compulsive internet use disorder, and a few others that I was looking at that all quoted these scales and others. But again, the problem is it's inconsistent. You know, do we measure this with this question or another one? And the results are so inconclusive. They did find in one instance that the there is a response in the brain for adolescents with different amounts of likes. But again, it's dependent on who's measuring and what they're testing.
And it's evolving as well. Like even like the most recent media platforms like Twitch. Like streaming. People look at numbers. They can see who's watching. They can see the average minutes watched, their followers, their subscriptions, their this. And it's, you get bombarded by numbers. And to block it out is so difficult. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
But I think what's disappointing is that in this, they are specifically putting internet gaming use or gaming disorder before any of the others. Because serious internet gaming or serious gaming is, I think, severely restricted compared to serious like social media use, which is more widely accessible.
And
it's gonna get
or television
worse.
Use or anything else.
Because I mean VR, right?
Like,
I know people who dive into VR and they'll play for 8 hours a day and they don't see the effect of it because they'd rather live in, I don't know, the VR chat application, or they want to play Beat Saber for that long. And it eventually, you know, we're talking down the line, you know, Ready Player One and all that kind of stuff. The Oasis, so I don't talk in real life anymore. You know, it's...
I mean, Black Mirror's done lots of episodes on it.
That was the thing,
But...
I'm just thinking about that episode with, like, that dude who collects, like, saliva from people and puts them into his 3D universe.
So weird. I have no context on this one.
That's the only Black Mirror episode I've seen, because my boyfriend was like, hey, you should watch this. It's about like an incel and you stuff were like that. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll watch it. And then afterwards he was like, how do you like it? I was like, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. But I mean, that's Black Mirror in a nutshell. But it's meant to do
It's
that.
Meant to disrupt.
But I was like, don't like, no, bad touch. But I think what you've said, Kate, raised a lot of interesting points for me, because that's why I've been a bit quiet, because I've just been listening.
Absorb the content. Learn from me.
Because it's pretty heavy, honestly.
Yeah.
But from what I can gather is that I feel like it needs to be a lot broader, because I think internet gaming addiction definitely starts, like, well, online gaming, starts when you're younger, and these days it's starting so much younger. With, like, Fortnite being available free on, like, an iPad, say.
That's true,
and it's definitely online gaming. Because I think when people think of gaming, they think of, like, yes, you can play online on a console, but they definitely think of more, like, consoles.
It's very traditional. Like, you hold yourself up.
Like
the glow of the CRT playing Halo until, like, 2 a.m. or whatever. And, you like, that's not the world. Well, I mean, 20 years ago. But that's not the world that we live in now.
No. Because that's the old way of thinking about video game addiction. But these days, it's in your hand constantly. And children are being given... This raises a whole other issue that I'd like to talk about at some point, which is, like, iPad babysitter.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Good but old like, screen time.
Screen time and that sort of thing. Like, there's even an app on your phone now that tells you about screen time.
As long as your kid shuts up on my 8-hour flight, I don't care.
Yeah, that's a mood. But the thing is, it's
that's
like...
That's a little different, though.
Oh, that's a mood.
It's a little different to being, like, you know, Karen going shopping and giving little Billy iPads for, like, 15 minutes?
Or
and then
worst,
he screams if he can't look at it.
The worst, you know, developmentally, is when the child's given an iPad and the parent is giving given a phone, and then the parent is just disengaged as well, because then the child has to actually... I'm not going
to
go there.
The
That's not this episode.
But
that attachment style, like, I've had multiple instances on just public transport where children should not be openly welcoming my, you know, smiles.
Yeah.
And they have, because they have very... I mean, I can't talk to other people's parenting, but their attachment and their comfort is an iPad, which is not...
Natural.
So this, not I know there's probably more research and talking points there, but is this focused, like, for the gaming disorder, does it only target adults, or is this also targeted towards people under 18 as well?
Well, that's the other question.
Is it just a broad, like, is it that broad in that regard?
At this stage, it is just a broad kind of...
It's very broad. Like, it doesn't really broad. Classify.
There's no...
It can be kind of, it can kind of change where, increased priority given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes precedent over other life interests and daily activities. If you're at different points in your life, right, like, those interests and activities are going to be, you know, in different points in your priority list.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And something to be said here is that there is a comorbidity. And I know that for myself, you know, when bouts of depression kick in, the first thing I want to do is avoid life through video games.
It's
is that
escape.
Video game addiction or is that my depression acting up?
Yeah.
I mean, the comorbidity there. And we can't say for the general population that there isn't a confound here that is explaining these characteristics as well.
Definitely.
And there could be, you know, a third variable that is playing in for each of the people.
Well, I always came down to, you know, do I want to sit in an... when it comes to kids, anyway, to do a school. Like, people would skip school to play video games, and they'd be like, oh, do I want to sit in a classroom and look at math equations and multiplication tables for 6 hours? Or do I want to play online and play some World of Warcraft as an example and sit in there and drink, you know, pop and juice, sorry.
Yeah, Jesus.
I was using the, you know, the broader sense of the word.
No, I understand what you completely mean, but... Again, I feel like that's still a sort of generalization of, you know, that's the fat gamer dude in his room
the first stage.
Yeah, drinking Mountain Dew, but like for like 24 hours.
We've all seen that South Park episode.
Yeah, and he just like wheeze himself in like a Gatorade bottle, that sort of thing.
Bathroom. Oh,
because that's what I think a lot of people do think video game addiction is. Yeah. And it is.
I think that's
the almost extreme level of like...
It's like,
you know,
where to draw the line.
When you make a neckbeard nest around your PC, that sort of thing.
And the other thing, sorry to interrupt, but it's going off self-report.
Yes.
And depending on a person's self-esteem, which could also be a variable not looked at in these surveys.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to think that I've got the worst anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, I'm always gaming. And if someone's led you to believe that it's, you know, there's a lot of things it could be impacting on individual results. And I'll read you some of the questions actually in the 27 items for the Internet Gaming Disorder Scale, as suggested. During the last year, have there been periods where you were constantly thinking about gaming while you were at school or work? During the last year, have you felt that you need to continue playing for longer periods of time? That's apparently supposed to measure tolerance. Then we've got in withdrawal. Have you been feeling tense or restless when you were unable to play games? That's a pretty drastic one.
Yeah.
It's also very broad as well. It's like, do you feel stressed when you're away from the computer and doing real life things?
And then that's the other thing. Yeah, there's a confound there that could be, you know. Persistence, did you want to play less but couldn't? You know, have you played games to forget about your problems? Hell yeah.
Yeah, same.
Big been mood. There.
That's a big mood.
Do anything to forget my problems.
Yeah.
Pump the music, run some, you know.
Knuckles!
Some Knuckles.
Yeah.
Some Sonic Adventure 2, you know how it is.
I will also say... there have been a lot of gaming organizations from all over the world that are concerned about what effect this is going to have on the industry. So organizations, so the Entertainment Software Association from the US and Canada, the Interactive Software Entertainment Association from Australia and New Zealand, from South Korea, from the UK, like all of these organizations, I believe it was in January this year, they were speaking with the World Health Organization about whether or not it should be, like,
on the community.
Whether they're being a little bit hasty about having this included in the ICD-11.
Yeah.
ESA CEO, so this is the CEO of the US gaming body, it's our hope that through continued dialogue we can help the World Health Organization avoid rushed action and mistakes that could take years to correct, end quote. So there's clearly a big concern from these bodies that there's going to be a big... I mean, obviously... It's going to have a big impact on the people playing games, but it's also going to have a massive impact on the industry itself.
Yeah, and I mean, video games already get that demonization that, you know, violence in video games causes violence in real life. But, I mean, there's violence in books and violence in...
Video games is it bad. I mean, have you watched Channel 9 recently? Or 7 or 10? Like, we don't even need to pick stations, right? Like, that's
just violence on TV,
a staple of mainstream broadcast. It's like, oh, well, I mean,
it's on
let's
YouTube
bash
as well.
On... Well, yeah, that's true. But
unless we get a really famous one on, and then they can talk about how awesome something is, like they. You know,
I love Ninja. Yeah. Let's floss, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Bang. Honestly,
do you think
that's
with
a
the,
whole other story?
Oh yeah, that's going down a different rabbit hole. But do you think that with the companies they were saying let's not be too hasty? It's because as well they need to somehow find out a way to take action. Not against it, but like...
Well, to protect their bottom line, probably.
Well, sorry, to clarify, these organizations were not game companies. These were representative bodies. So sort of like more lobbying sort of... Like, obviously, they want to act in the industry's interest. Mm. I understand that. But also, like, there's kind of a ripple effect there that I imagine that they're mindful of.
Yeah, they would go down to force on the game companies that are part of, you know... But, I mean, that it can be solved, I guess, maybe from the game point of view, for in a loading screen, just say, hey, you're maybe playing a little bit...
Like the Nintendo Wii thing. Yeah. Like when you boot up a Wii every single time, it's like, okay, like don't helicopter. But also like maybe don't take floss. Breaks every 40... Don't floss ever.
ever.
Every 45 minutes, you know, maybe take a break.
Yeah. Like it's Nintendo not thirsty, games have always don't done feed that. It orange juice.
That's weirdly specific.
Yeah, yeah. That's an actual warning. Your Wii is not thirsty, don't feed it orange juice.
What game is that in?
I don't know. It's all over the internet when the Wii came out.
But those things can be used. Yeah, even if they're not going to be adhered, you know, people like parents or whatever could enforce that. Be like, okay, well, your session's now over.
Yeah. And I mean, furthermore, like, other products, like this is behavioral addictions, but, you know, addictions to substances, like this is the substance use disorder subgroup that works on behaviors. But for the substance group, they don't put stickers on wine bottles saying, have you finished this entire bottle? Maybe stop.
I mean, they do that with, like, they do that with cigarettes, right? Like, it's different standards for different industries. And like maybe games, you could say that some of these associations are concerned about games being put under the microscope. And I mean, we've definitely seen that with, you know, companies like, countries like Belgium being like, no loot boxes.
Yeah.
A bunch of games have since had microtransactions removed, or the games being removed entirely. Like it was Fire Emblem Heroes and Animal Crossing on mobile. You can't play in Belgium after... I think it was August this year, so...
Yeah. Well, they make a different version of the game.
Yeah,
like Counter-Strike they put in China, and they actually have to tell you the loot box percentages.
They buy
more. I mean, WoW in China does different death... Because there's something about the undead in China.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that like culturally sensitive
blood
stuff.
Yeah. Like that as well.
It's definitely an interesting story, and I imagine that this won't be the last that we speak about it.
No.
We're probably going to be bringing this up as that discussion takes place further.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that one, Kate.
Sorry to bore you with all my statistics.
No, it's very interesting.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I've been playing The Gardens Between.
What's that?
This game is one that was developed in Melbourne. So, it came out quite a while ago, I feel. It's very Melbourne. I'm just going to...
Hang on. So, does it have its own coffee shop? Is what I'm asking.
Is it wearing flannel? Does it have, like, thick-rimmed glasses and like, a massive beard?
Yeah. Do you attach the beard attachment to the bottom of the Switch?
Oh, that's so weird. I feel so uneasy about that.
Does it wear plugs on the Joy-Cons? Like, big
10
plugs.
Mil minimum. 10 mil minimum, 100%.
Hi, Melbourne.
Jeez. So, it is an adventure puzzle game. You're playing as two characters, Arena and Friend. Friend? It's spelled F-R-E-N-D-T.
Friend.
The main mechanic is time. So you are hitting left and right on the analog stick, or you can use L and R on the bumpers, or the right stick. Like it's pretty accessible in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's the main mechanic is time, but it's not. Like, you're not on a time limit, so you're controlling time. Oh. So, to basically progress, you just need to play. Like kind of hit play, so you have play and, like, rewind, basically, is a good way to think about it. So, you're not directly controlling these characters. They are basically on rails. But the game doesn't feel like it's on rails, and I feel like that's where kind of the magic is.
Mm.
So, you're walking through... Arena will usually have, like, a lantern that she's carrying through... the levels, and you need to try and pick up sort of like things of light. You need to make sure that you dodge things of darkness, because otherwise pretty much you use like the globes of light to make bridges, or you need to interact with other elements in the level. You need to be pretty observant, because Arena and Friend interact with different things, so you need to have like your set of eyes bouncing back and forth between both of them. It's not, you know, you're not on a time limit. So, obviously, Kate, you just played a bit of it. You weren't feeling under pressure in...
No. Confused.
A little bit clueless, yeah.
Yeah.
It is very abstract. I should probably mention that as well.
It's Melbourne.
It is Melbourne. That's... Yeah, I was like, Melbourne, a.k.a. abstract.
Yeah.
So, the way that it tells its story, honestly, I didn't know the characters were named Arena and Friend through the game itself. Which is not great, but it's very, very abstract. It's very, very... You don't get a lot. It's all these, like, little bits and pieces that you kind of pull together from each level that show, you know, small pockets of their life. Like, it seems like these are two kids that have kind of, like, grown up together.
Mm.
And, you know, they're, like... pretty much you start the game off and they're in their little treehouse. And then lightning strikes, and they all die.
it's lightning fast.
And they're like kind of thrown back to all of these different memories that they're reliving and reinteracting with. So that's,
is it like PTSD?
Not quite. So
hey, you sound way too excited about that.
Yeah, abstract, not dark.
Well, it sounds like it might be, because the way the art style is done is as if they're looking at these planets that are
objects. Yeah.
So if it's playing out a memory, it would be similar to the way that your mind would actually do it.
That's a good
in that
way to look
one
at
thing
it.
Becomes a focus.
I like it a lot. I mean, the art style is gorgeous. It's like I don't want to call it Spartan because it's not bare, but it gives you just the right amount of detail, even on the Switch, to feel like it's not. It's just really good to look at.
Yeah,
it's just such a good looking game, guys. Holy God, I love it so much.
I'm still so confused. I have no idea.
So you basically just go. Okay, I haven't played much of the game.
You try and explain
my
it.
Understanding is that you just hit go, which is the play, and then they will do what they need to do. And then if there's something to interact with, I hit A, and then you interact with it. And hopefully it lets you not get to that stoppage, because I got to the stoppage and then it just stopped.
So it's a little bit hard to describe as well, because it's a puzzle game, so you can't really clue people in a lot without giving spoilers. So I will spoil a single level. Basically, you are walking through as Arena and Front, and you power on. Like, you basically plug in the TV and the VHS player.
Oh, that's cool.
By interacting with something and then reversing time on just that item. So you can reverse time on different elements in a level. You plug in the power, the VHS and the TV power on.
Mm-hmm. But you have to rewind the VHS.
So, yeah, basically, there's like a point in the timeline where Front taps a button.
Yeah.
But you need to rewind it all the way for the VHS to pop out.
Right.
So you need to actually rewind Front to that point that he's holding the button down, and it will rewind as long as he's holding it down until the VHS pops out, and then you can continue on through the level.
That's interesting.
It's really crafty in the way that it gives you pretty much the same tools in each level, but they show up in different kinds of ways. Like, it's all time control. There's not really a mechanic that isn't time control that you're in direct control of outside of touching a thing, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's making sure that everything lines up completely right.
And knowing what the game wants you to do.
Yeah. Sometimes that can get frustrating, but because you always have access to all of it. Like, it's not a puzzle game where you'll get past a certain point and then realize, oh, I needed that thing from all the way back there, but I can't get back there, so I need to restart a level. It doesn't do that.
Okay, cool.
So it doesn't lock you into a lose state, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because puzzle games really
do that.
It's really frustrating when it does that.
They do that often these days.
That said, later on in the game, you're basically going through, like, these memory bubbles in, like, two or three stages each. So you've got like five or six of them, I think it is. Towards the latter end of the game, it does get really finicky, and you're like, wait, hang on. Because to make it more complex, you're still using the same mechanic, but you just have more things to interact with. Right. And so if it kind of turns into a bit of trial and error sometime, and you're just like, why doesn't this work? I feel like this should work. And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm an idiot. Let's try this.
Yeah.
Because it's a puzzle game, right?
Mm.
For the most part, you don't turn around and go, oh, I didn't know that was there. Like, it signposts main interaction points pretty well.
Yeah.
Not the best, but pretty well. And it doesn't lock you into a loose state. So, again, I can't.
You just keep going and going until you find out the combination.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems to be the way that I'm playing it at the moment.
So, it does turn a little bit into, like, trial and error sometimes, but that's really only at the very, very end of the game. The music, I feel like, is kind of a big one as well. And it's this, like, really low-key sort of, like, piano soundtrack that you have that's kind of very light over the top, which is kind of like Hyrule in Zelda.
Ooh.
You have this, like, kind of tasteful, like, little bits of piano that kind of drop in here and there. Like, you haven't got music set to the stages. It kind of just hangs out in the background.
Sorry, I just went, like, straight to Twilight Princess Hyrule feel, where as soon as you walk in, it goes, Diana!
Because I was wondering why you were like, ugh. Like, you had this, like, face, like, expression of disgust, and you're like, wait, no, that's not the game I meant.
Yeah, no, I just, like, straight to Twilight Princess. It's just like, hey, guess what? You're here.
Bomb!
Yeah, it's just, oh, no thanks.
Is there any good music from Twilight Princess?
Oh, so much.
Okay, maybe we'll dig some up.
I need to talk about Twilight Princess at some point.
We've spoken about Skyward Sword.
Yeah, I know, but I need to talk about Twilight Princess. Anyway, continue.
Sorry. Yeah, I was like, the gardens between. I'm just trying to check what things it's on, because I'm playing it on Switch. It's also on PC. Mac compatible.
Yeah.
Someone's happy. Yay.
Also Xbox happy. One and PS4. So it is basically everywhere. I believe it's also on iPad and iPhone.
Ooh.
So you can download it on your phone. It might look a little bit more jagged than like a Switch, but it looks fine on the Switch. I mean, if you're playing it on an iPad, obviously you've got plenty of room. And because it's such a simple thing of just like, you'd literally just be hitting left and right on the screen, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like that would make the jump very, very well to iPhone or iPad. Yeah. So that's Gardens Between. I like it a lot. I wish I could be less vague about it.
Yeah.
But because it's a puzzle game, like, I really have my hands tied. Because you just spoil everything.
Yeah.
And it is really sort of touching in a very abstract way again.
Mm.
Sort of learning more about these characters. Which, I mean, it'd be good if I knew what the names of them were. Kind of my first playthrough. But
I think you could, like, if you didn't know the names, though, you could probably just make them up.
You kind of make your own story up to begin with. Well, that's what I did.
Exactly. I think everyone would be like, you just dumped in this world and there you go.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of go, oh, what's this?
It's trying
what's
to be very world? Art game. And I'm like, all right, bring it back.
Yeah, exactly.
But even if it hasn't, it's still quite art game and it still works. The Gardens Between, it's available and everything. Except Android. RIP.
Aww. Yeah, RIP.
Bye.
No one's sad.
Whatever. No one's sad. Oh, just Kosh.
No
just
one cares about
Android. No one's sad.
You've got a Switch. Right. Oh, you've got a Switch. That's true.
No one cares about Androids unless their name is Connor. So, you know.
I care about Android.
I'm ready.
You're not allowed.
I am ready.
That is the end of the show this week. Thanks for hanging out on Zed Games. It's okay. Well, there's going to be more next week.
Well, I guess we'll just have to stay tuned and follow us everywhere.
Follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at ZEDGamesAU. We're also going to be putting up some bonus content on the website, ZEDGamesAU.net. There's going to be another episode going up there where you're talking Lifty. And I'm talking Feather, and Kosh is talking Hollow Knight. Bonus web content.
We love it.
Dedication.
We love and appreciate you a bunch. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
See you later.